Welcome to WFAE Talks, our weekly podcast involving the goings-on of the WFAE newsroom. With me is Lisa Miller, our education reporter, and Ben Bradford, our what's your new title again? Your I gave you a good one last time.
Senior Executive Vice President of Reporting.
That wasn't it. It was something about jack of all trades.
Something like that.
Everything, but also reports on energy,
energy and environment. Yeah, that sounds right.
So yeah. Well, big news this week, and not in our, necessarily in our newsroom, but at WFAE, Mr. Roger Cerro, our GM and president of 26 years, is stepping down at the end of the year, pretty much.
Yeah, he is. He's seen the station through a lot. You know, 26 years ago when he came, it was still a part of UNC Charlotte, and it was playing primarily smooth jazz.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so he's seen it through a lot of change, and, you know, from now being primarily news and talk and to expanding our local coverage. And I talked to him as part of a short piece we did this week.
Right.
We had a far-ranging interview together, and he was telling me some of the stuff that has happened. And one of the things he had mentioned, which I didn't realize, when he first got here, Hurricane Hugo was about a year afterwards, and we were off the air for 5 days.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that?
No, I knew that, but did you know why we were off the air for 5 days?
I thought because of Hurricane Hugo.
No, like there's even a better explanation.
Okay.
It was a little piece of piping at the top of the transmitter that basically just went over. It was like a straw. It just fell over on itself, and it was about a $23 fix, but it was
off here for 5 days.
5 days over
for
that.
$23
yeah.
fix. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know,
that's interesting. I did not know that.
Well, there you go.
Wow. All right. This week's issues we're going to discuss: lawmakers' move to abandon Common Core. We'll talk about water quality in our region. It was the subject of a WFAE public conversations event that involved both of Lisa Miller and Ben Bradford. And we'll talk about the governor's coal ash solution, which meets a lot of resistance and criticism. So, first of all, Common Core. Lisa, the lawmakers on a panel that's been studying this are recommending that North Carolina get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been meeting since December. They've had about 4 meetings, and they've tried to get a number of voices on this subject. You know, they had several people, including Civitas, the John Locke Foundation, which is a conservative group.
And so is Civitas, right?
Civitas, yeah.
And
Civitas
John Locke
as
Foundation.
Well. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Education folks from there saying, hey, you know, we don't necessarily need these standards. You know, we can come up with good standards on our own. And you know, maybe they're not necessarily so different, but that's what they decided to do. They also had some business folks. They had some other education folks, who, including the state superintendent of schools, June Atkinson, who pushed hard to keep them in place. And it looks like there's going to be a bill filed. So they had a draft bill on tap there.
How different will this be? Or are they just going to call it something else? Because Common Core is such a lightning rod phrase.
Sure.
We not see a whole lot of change in just calling it something different?
Sure. And so Indiana was the first state to really opt out of Common Core. And that just happened, you know, officially for last month. A lot of states are kind of moving toward this. And one of the criticisms there is that, look, they're not really changing that much. It's kind of Common Core without the name Common Core. And even North Carolina lawmakers referred to that when they were talking about this proposed bill, that, you know, no, we want to do something different than Indiana, which not everyone in Indiana would agree with that. But, you know, we want to really concentrate on coming up with our own standards. You know, we'll give, you know, at least folks until Education State Board until the end of 2015 to do this. But these standards are so broad that, you know, there very well could be many of the things in Common Core in these standards. And many of the proponents of getting rid of Common Core in North Carolina say, hey, that's okay, too. It still will be ours. It'll still be our North Carolina, the state of North Carolina, our standards.
And who came up with Common Core? Like who? They're not our standards. So who's in charge of the Common Core? I mean, where do they come from?
Well, it was a group of state leaders that put this together. The State Government Association did that, working with School Superintendents Association. So that's how it came up. And North Carolina decided to get in on this, too. Now, you know, the Department of Education, after that happened, kind of went in and said, hey, this looks good, and we are going to incentivize states to get onto this by handing out grant money somewhat related to this. So a lot of grant money. Yeah, a lot of grant money. So, but it, you know, it was not a move from the federal government first off.
But yet that's the claim we hear a lot.
That's the claim you hear, criticism
of the federal government. The federal government actually, though, took a cue from the states on this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and the other thing, too, is that, you know, the people who in supporting the Common Core point out a lot that these are standards. So these are goals for what students are expected to know. They are not lesson plans or curriculum.
Things are being taught differently, though, right?
Because
of Common Core?
Things are being taught very differently. I mean, we had this discussion yesterday about your third grader trying to learn math. And how it was just kind of mind-bending and mind-numbing for you because you have a very fast way of doing it. And this this way is – Common Core way is more focused on the concept. It takes a little bit longer to get there.
Right. This is the thing that's gone viral on the internet. There's that someone solving some very simple math problem, right? And they show, okay, mm-hmm. here's the way that we learn to do it, where you carry the one, and then right. here's the Common Core way, where they break it down into like sets of tens and fives and twos
exactly.
and all that. Well, it's funny because, you know, I saw that, and you know, I don't know, I got a bunch of friends who are teachers, and you know, one of them passed around sort of the counterpoint to that, which is where they showed a much more complicated math problem, at least, you know, on paper to solve that way. So they showed, see if I can remember off the top of my head, but it would be something like, you know, if you were to see, you know, like 3,000 minus 127 or something like that, right? And they showed how, you know, if you were to do your carry the one process, you know, you're to do the subtraction and you draw your line out and you know, do it that way. And then they showed that against the Common Core method. And it sort of has the reverse results, right? Because the Common Core method, you say, okay, well, if you take 100 off of 3,000, what do you got? You got 2,900. Okay. If you take 20 off of that, what do you have? Okay. You've got, you know, 2,880. All right.
All
if you
these
take
similar
7 off of
units
that,
of measurement.
Right. Yeah. You've got, whatever it is off of there. So it's kind of interesting. You know, I've seen kind of both things on it, but that's what you're talking
now,
about here.
Now,
right?
Ed, you can have the argument with Greg that I had yesterday. Uh-huh. I mean, I
I'm totally agnostic because I'm going to be bad at math either way. So I'm indoctrinated and bad at arithmetic.
I can completely see where that's frustrating. I could see the other side where
it seems to me like, you know, when I hear about places trying to get rid of Common Core, and I'm not nearly as educated on this as I should be. But it seems like, you know, I hear about Indiana, I hear about Florida. Now, is it surprising that here North Carolina started to do it? We have a very conservative legislature, and it seems like there's sort of a partisan element of, you know, sort of the more liberal side kind of favoring Common Core standards versus a more conservative side kind of opposing it. Is that my perception? Am I right about that?
You know, that is somewhat of a perception. I would say, yeah, there are a lot of very right, far right conservatives who do not like Common Core because it is viewed as this. We are telling you, North Carolina, federal interference. But on the other side, there are also people who are against the Common Core. It often takes more the lines of testing, all the testing that comes along with the Common Core. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, when the committee was talking, this was a committee of senators and representatives. There was one quote from Senator Jerry Tillman. He said, I've heard both from the Tea Partiers and the liberal soccer moms that this is what they want us to do.
I didn't know soccer moms were equated with liberalism.
Or any party necessarily.
Right. But, I heard that quote. I just heard the soccer moms and Tea Partiers.
He may have been riffing off Arnie Duncan's comment that he got in. That's the Secretary of Education that he got in trouble with saying, you know, it's white suburban moms who suddenly realize their kids aren't as brilliant as they thought they were, something like that. Maybe he was riffing off the white suburban moms. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I just wondered if it was something we expect,
and you know, conservatives.
Right. Yeah. If it's something that we should expect, you know, that was to be expected in this legislature, that ultimately this issue would come up.
Yeah. And I must say, too, I mean, you know, a lot of the lawmakers who support getting rid of Common Core, I wouldn't call them Tea Partiers. I wouldn't necessarily. They're way far right. But it is interesting. You have the lieutenant governor who is very against Common Core, but you have Governor McCrory who has said he supports it.
That'll be an interesting discussion. Yeah. See what happens if he'll go along or fight the legislature on this.
So yeah, it will be.
Showdown might be coming on Common Core. Let's move on to the next topic. You two were, I got to say, did a great job this week at a public conversation on water quality, what's in our water. So did our ATC host and producer of these programs, Mark Rumsey. I got to get that out there. But, you know, I thought it was just a fascinating discussion. We've talked about coal ash, but the issue is really so much bigger than that, and this event really got at that. I think we got a better understanding of the overall problem. And
right, one of the things that you learn that I've learned as I've been reporting mostly, you know, predominantly on coal ash, but just in general, one of the things that you learn as you're looking at threats to our water system is just sort of the way that our water system works. And the way that it works is that we use it as a natural filtration system. So what that means is that we pump a lot of things in there and rely on the water itself to, you know, on the flow of the water itself to sort of clean it up for us. You know, a guy from the county, county water tester, Rusty Roselle, talking about how, you know, our water is 70% impaired or more than that.
And it's a depressing situation.
His words, depressing situation.
And we don't have as much filters of these pollutants anymore because of so much development. Here's Rusty Roselle, his official his water quality program, water quality program manager for Charmex Stormwater Services. And here's before he said how depressing it all is, here's an example of what he gave of how pollutants aren't filtered as much as they were because of so much development in the area.
If you take an acre of trees in Mecklenburg County and you rain an inch on top of it, that raindrop will hit the leaf on that tree, settle slowly down to the forest floor, and soak into the ground and go into groundwater. That recharges groundwater and filters out a lot of the pollutants contained in the atmosphere. If you cut those trees down and put down an acre of asphalt, that same 1 inch of rain puts 27,000 gallons of water in the creek, straight to a pipe and straight into a creek. And that natural system is just in shock by all this added water that's moving really fast. In the summer, it's really hot. So you're scouring out the stream banks, you're scouring out the bottom, you're destroying aquatic habitat, and you're really destroying creeks.
And then Rusty Roselle went on to say, it's really quite depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
You think of all the development and all those acres and acres have been paved over and water and that's not filtered anymore in this area. It's pretty mind-blowing.
I know. You know, the thing that's interesting, though, too, is that when developers are putting in, you know, systems to kind of mitigate this a little bit, they're not very complicated, at least when you're starting with a green
Grass and dirt does it.
I mean, just make sure you have some, you know, maybe some buffers on the stream. Make sure you have a good sort of maybe retention pond sort of area where all that water can come down. So it's interesting. And I think Rick Gaskins
from the Catawba River Keeper.
The Catawba River Keeper said something like, you know, yeah, but there are small things you can do, like putting rain gardens, you know, on your property as a individual. But the difficult thing is, you know, stormwater. What was so fascinating with what Rusty was saying we've only had our stormwater system since like 1979. I mean, we've had, you know, our water system, or, you know, been able to turn on the faucet for a long time. But before then, we didn't really, you know, all that runoff, you know, all the curbs and stuff. I mean, there wasn't really much of a stormwater system. So he said, we're trying to get up to speed. But then if you're a developer, you know, coming in, who's trying to, you know, develop some land in an urban area already, you know, there are now, regulations about what you have to do. You have to, you know, basically put in new stuff because that stuff wasn't there beforehand.
Well, another thing concerning water quality, coal ash, the governor has proposed a solution that is meeting a lot of resistance, and there are a lot of accusations. Basically, his solution pretty much plays into exactly what Duke Energy would want. A lot of the accusations, it seems.
I think that's fair. I think that essentially what happened is, and when we reported on this last Friday, is the governor proposed what would be legislation. He wants the legislature to pass a bill for what to do with the coal ash at these 14 Duke Energy coal plants across the state. So the plan came out and it strengthens a lot. It wants to strengthen oversight, basically how often regulators go to these plants. Right now, they have to go biannually.
So why are environmentalists so upset?
So environmental groups ultimately, I'll lump all of them together because they pretty much want the same thing, which is they want that ash excavated out of there, dried out, and put into lined landfills where it can't leak. The state's kind of, you know, has been asking Duke for plans and has been said it's developing plans and so forth on what it wants to do. But you got to remember that last year, before the Dan River spill, the state had essentially was involved in a law is and still is involved in a lawsuit against Duke over these leaks. And at the same time, that getting into that lawsuit, I don't want to go through all this context, but basically getting into that lawsuit blocked environmental groups from launching their own lawsuits. And then the state quickly proposed a settlement. And the settlement, you know, I went through that settlement document, and it's called a consent order, and basically looked through it. And there's a lot of calls for studies, and there's a lot of steps involved, and, you know, 90 days for this, 60 days for a reply, 30 days to go over it, 45 days for another study or a reaction to it or do a response or to, you know, to deliver a map of what things are going to do. And you go through it, and there's never actually a point where it says okay, and the end result is going to be that we are going to, you know, action. And if you look at this legislation, the criticism from environmental groups is that it's basically the same thing. It does require action at four plants, but Duke had already said it was going to close those plants and remove the ash. One of those is Riverbend, which is on Mountain Island Lake, and the proposal there is for Charlotte Airport to get the ash and use it as landfill, and we've done some reporting on that. And then the rest of them, it doesn't commit to one way or another, but at a meeting earlier this week, same night as that public conversation, Duke and state regulators both presented to lawmakers who are looking at the coal ash issue, and, you know, it was presented as, well, here are our options and here's how it would play out. But, you know, ultimately the message was trying to remove all of this ash, you know, picking it all up and put it into lined landfills. The state said Duke doesn't have the space, and if we were to try to put it in like public landfills, for instance, it would take up 15% of all available capacity. And then Duke came up and said, hey, listen, if you were to do it this way, it would cost $10 billion. And, you know, at the Marshall Steam Station, which is over here in Charlotte area, that would take 30 years because of the huge amount of ash that's there. So whether that's right or not, you know, I mean, that's how they presented it. And if that's true, it would certainly not be a favorable option. Environmental groups are criticizing it as essentially, hey, they built up this straw man. We're not saying that you need to truck all of the ash out of Marshall. You know, if you were to use it as landfill, you were to recycle some of it, you were to do these things. So basically, I mean, to boil all of that down, environmental groups think that the state has proposed some legislation that does not do a whole lot more than the settlement that was widely decried last year. That basically, after all this time, they've gone back to and said, "Hey, do the same thing again," and that they're kind of blowing up the case for it by kind of exaggerating the costs. That's sort of the the contention there.
All right, Ben, Lisa, got another one put to bed. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks. All right. Thank you.